listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm speaking with James Sullivan, co-founder of the Las Vegas Agency and the Battle for Vegas charity softball game. The fifth annual is coming up with hockey stars from the Vegas Golden Knights and football stars from the Las Vegas Raiders facing off against each other to play a different sport. James, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me, Heather.
So where did the idea come from to pit hockey players against football players for a charity softball game?
You know, it was perfect timing of everything coming together at one time. The Knights were already here in Vegas. They had announced the Raiders would be coming, and they had just finished Las Vegas Ballpark over here in Summerlin. So we were representing and working with Riley Smith, and, you know, Riley wanted to create an event that gives back to the community. And we were trying to figure out a way to, you know, kind of involve a little bit of everything. And so that's how we came up with the concept for Battle for Vegas, was involving the Knights, the Raiders, and doing a game at Las Vegas Ballpark.
Okay. So what's involved in a Battle for Vegas charity softball game?
So as you mentioned, it's a charity softball game featuring the Knights and Raiders. It's in its fifth year. The event has raised about $850,000 for local children's charities. So every year we pick two different charity partners, and each team plays on behalf of one of those charities. And the event starts off with a home run derby, and then the game itself goes until around 9:30 at night, and then the night ends with fireworks.
Nice. So which charities are receiving funds from the event this year?
So this year, Jack Eichel is on the National Board of Directors for Best Buddies Foundation, and they will be the primary beneficiary for this year's event. We have not announced the other charity partners at this time, but Best Buddies is the primary beneficiary for this year's.
Okay, so speaking of Jack Eichel, who are the team captains and the players this year?
So Jack Eichel, obviously leading his team, and then AJ Cole is captain of the Raiders team this year. The full rosters will be announced here very shortly, so we can't reveal those players quite yet.
Okay. So between hockey players and football players, which team usually wins?
So it's interesting. It's in its fifth year, so it's split 2-2. The Raiders won the first 2 years, and then the Golden Knights team has won the last 2 years. So it's always a competitive game. Last year's game actually came down to the very last inning, the very last at bat. And Terrence Long, who's an alumni for the Athletics, hit a walk-off home run to end the game.
Okay, awesome. So you told us kind of what's involved, but when and where exactly is it taking place this year?
So it's Saturday, July 13th at Las Vegas Ballpark.
Okay, and how much are the tickets?
So tickets start at $35, and they can be purchased either at the Aviators box office, or you could go to battleforvegas.com, and there's a ticket link on the website.
Perfect. So for people who haven't gone before, but they've heard about it over the past 5 years, kind of paint us a picture. What's it like to sit there in the stadium and watch these players who they might normally be used to watching playing their normal sports? What's the energy like? What's the atmosphere like? What's the experience like?
Yeah, so it's really a great opportunity for fans to get to see these players away from their traditional sport. Obviously, both in hockey and in football, they're wearing pads and helmets. And, you know, this is a chance to see them outside of their normal environment. So we always tell everyone it's a family fun night. The players do sign autographs throughout the night. They'll come over to the stands and sign autographs for the fans. We have all the mascots in attendance as well. So, you know, Chance will be there. We'll have mascots from different teams. Buckets from the Aces will be there. So we try to make it, you know, as family fun as possible, bringing together all the different elements of Las Vegas professional sports.
Okay. So you've got the mascots from all the teams. You've got the mascots from the Vegas Golden Knights. You've got the mascot from the Las Vegas Raiders. You've got the Aviators mascots. What about all the cheerleaders?
Yeah, they appear as well. So both sets of cheerleaders will be at the game as well, doing multiple performances. And then also we've got the drum bots from the Golden Knights game team. They'll be performing as well.
Okay, sounds cool. And you mentioned that you also have the mascot from the Las Vegas Aces. What's the connection there?
So the event is meant to bring together all of Vegas professional sports. And so we try to include elements from all the different teams in town. We've got players, like I say, alumni from the A's that are playing, the mascot from the Aces. The Aces are on the road that weekend and obviously in season as well. So there's really no way to involve any of the players, but the best we can do with the Aces is bring the mascot buckets out.
Cool. So basically, anyone who's a fan of hockey, a fan of football, a fan of baseball, or a fan of basketball, they'll all have something there that night that they love.
Yeah, exactly. If you're a fan of either the sports, any of the athletes, you know, or like I say, I mean, if you just love baseball in general, the players themselves have a great time and, you know, they love playing in the event. Some of them are good, some of them are not. It's not their core sport, but at the end of the day, they're out there to have a good time and raise money for charity.
Actually, that's a good point. You know, it's not their core sport, but some of us assume that athletes grow up playing all kinds of games and they're usually good in a lot of different sports.
Yeah, you know, that's the one thing. Like, we never know how the game's going to go and how good they are and things like that. We purposely cap the game at 90 minutes. So it starts at 8 o'clock and it ends at 9:30 because we just don't know how many innings they're going to get through and how good they're going to be and things like that. So, like I say, some of them are very good. Some of them grew up playing baseball and you could tell they have played baseball before. And then others have never played baseball before at all. And, you know, it's interesting to see them out there as professional athletes competing in a sport that is not their main sport.
So it's kind of like a fun showcase more than a serious softball game.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, like they're out there to have fun. They're out there to raise money. I do always say it's interesting because you put 20 professional athletes on a field and at the end of the day, they all want to win. It does get competitive the last couple innings. And you can definitely tell the players they do want to win, even though they are out there raising money for charity.
That's awesome. Okay, so you did mention the website, but let's tell the listeners again, where can they find out more details about the 5th annual Battle for Vegas charity softball game or buy their tickets if they want to attend?
So the website is battleforvegas.com. It has all the information on the website. We'll be releasing the player information very shortly, who will be playing in this year's events. But like I mentioned, Jack Eichel and AJ Cole will be the two captains.
Perfect. Okay. So once again, battleforvegas.com is the website to go to. That's all spelt out, battleforvegas.com. You can find out more about the 5th annual Battle for Vegas charity softball game there. It's happening, of course, between the Vegas Golden Knights and the Las Vegas Raiders. Captains are Jack Eichel for the Vegas Golden Knights and AJ Cole for the Las Vegas Raiders. And it's all happening on Saturday, July 13th. Gates at 6 p.m., first pitch at 8 p.m., and then, of course, the post-game fireworks at 9:30, and that's at Las Vegas Ballpark, which, of course, is home to the Las Vegas Aviators. So you will see mascots from the Aviators, from the Vegas Golden Knights, from the Las Vegas Raiders, and from the Las Vegas Aces, as well as the cheerleaders from the Vegas Golden Knights and the Las Vegas Raiders. So plenty of fun as you watch your favorite sports stars battle it out, all for charity, of course. And once again, the website, battleforvegas.com. And we've been speaking today with James Sullivan. He's the co-founder of the Battle for Vegas charity softball game, 5th year going. And, you know, this year it's going to be who is the lead. Because right now, as he mentioned, they're tied 2-1 for the Raiders, 2-1 for the Vegas Golden Knights. Let's see who wins number 5. So find out more at battleforvegas.com. And James, I want to thank you so much for being here, letting us know more about this amazing event that always captures the interest of the community. And it sounds like so much fun. So I really appreciate you being here sharing with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
We are the NFHS. That stands for the National Federation of State High School Associations. But really, what we stand for, together with the NIAA, are the 48,000 high school sports and performing arts students in Nevada. And so, we stand. We stand for the runners, debate team members, and basketball players. We stand for their coaches, officials, and adjudicators. We stand for the drummers, football players, and actors. We stand for the golfers, singers, and swimmers. We stand as the national leader and advocate for these essential activities and all who participate in them and make them possible. Because it is our purpose to ensure that high school students get to play, perform, and compete together. To learn more about who we are and what we stand for, visit nfhs.org.
I'm Heather Vail, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Cindy Long, Food and Nutrition Service Administrator for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, or USDA. To help tackle childhood hunger during the summer months, the USDA has launched their new SUN programs, which is short for Summer Nutrition Programs. Cindy, thank you so much for being here today.
It's a pleasure to be here, Heather.
So what is the USDA?
The USDA is the Department of Agriculture, and I'm specifically with the Food and Nutrition Service, and we operate all of the nutrition assistance programs in the United States.
Okay. And how many children in Nevada suffer from food insecurity?
Well, what I can tell you is on an average day in Nevada, about 350,000 kids eat a school lunch. Many of those receive school breakfast, and they do that at a free or reduced price. So those are 350,000 kids who are in need of nutrition support.
Okay. Tell us about the new USDA Summer Nutrition Programs, or SUN programs.
So we have had a program for a while now that allows kids to receive meals when they come together in summer programs. So maybe something at a rec center or a summer school or church camp, kids come together and eat meals. But that's only ever been able to reach about 1 in 6 of the kids who get meals at school. So now we have two great new tools within the SUN programs. One is for rural areas where kids can, instead of having to come together every day, which can be challenging due to transportation and schedules, et cetera, families can either pick up meals or have meals delivered. And the third really exciting new part of the SUN program is something called SUN Bucks, which is going to be providing families of kids who receive free or reduced price meals with a card that they can use to buy grocery benefits. That card will be worth $120 per child for the summer.
Nice. Okay. So how would a child become eligible for the SUN program?
Well, any child that is eligible to receive a free or reduced price meal during the school year is eligible. And one of the great things about the SUN Bucks program is that many kids will automatically receive benefits if their families are currently on other programs like SNAP or TANF or other programs in the state. And there are other families who will still be eligible, and they'll be able to apply through a simple application that the state will make available.
Okay. Now, how are SUN programs different from other nutrition support initiatives for kids?
Well, most of the nutrition support that folks might be familiar with, like school meals, are based on this idea of kids coming together and somebody providing them meals. So these new pieces of the program, the meal delivery, the meal pickup, and especially the summer EBT card, that's really a new way to provide benefits that are specifically targeted at replacing the meals that kids receive at school.
Okay. How can people access SUN programs that are available right here?
Yeah, well, a great place to start is our website. So if you go to fns.usda.gov/summer, you'll find a range of resources. Now, one of those resources that I think is particularly useful is called our Site Finder, and it allows folks to go in and type in their location, maybe their zip code, and we'll be able to show where there are sites available, both for SUN meals, where kids eat together, as well as SUN meals to go. And it'll give you the location, the operating hours, and that kind of information. Now, states are still adding sites to the Site Finder. And in fact, I understand that Nevada is one of the states that is still pulling their information together and adding sites. So please check back, because that site will continue to populate in the coming weeks.
Okay, perfect. So once again, that website, fns.usda.gov/summer. FNS stands for Food and Nutrition Service, and then usda.gov/summer. And there you'll be able to find out all about the new SUN programs, including SUN Meals to Go and the program SUN Bucks, which you can take the money to the grocery store. So all of that is available, all of the information and more locations coming as we speak. And once again, fns.usda.gov/summer. And we've been speaking today with Cindy Long. She's the Food and Nutrition Service Administrator for the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And Cindy, it's been great finding out more about this new program and how it can benefit residents. So thank you so much for your time today.
And thank you for having me, Heather.
Most of us like to be out in the sun. That's why sunscreen and other safety measures are key to protecting your skin from aging and cancer. The FDA recommends using a sunscreen with a sun protection factor, or SPF, of 15 or higher. Also, look for broad spectrum on the label. That means both harmful ultraviolet A and B rays are blocked. UVA rays age the skin, UVB rays burn, and both cause cancer. But the perfect sunscreen doesn't count if you use it wrong. Don't need sunscreen on a cloudy day? Wrong. 80% of UV rays still get through the haze. Only use sunscreen at the beach? Nope. Anytime you're outside, UV rays attack the skin, so you need protection. And you have to reapply sunscreen every 2 hours. Remember, SPF plus broad spectrum equals healthy fun in the sun. Visit www.fda.gov/sunscreen for more information. A message from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration.
Your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit insurekidsnow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
This is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm speaking with Amy Goyer, National Family and Caregiving Expert for AARP. According to AARP's 2024 Caregiving and Travel Research, adult caregivers often find it challenging to take a personal trip with their care recipients. Amy, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on the show.
So, what are some of the key takeaways from AARP's recent caregiving and travel survey?
Well, one of the things we found was that traveling can have a positive impact on both caregivers and their care recipients. We found that about half of family caregivers who've traveled say it increased their emotional well-being, and about a third say they have more mental clarity after a trip. It is stressful being a caregiver, so having that break, having a change of scenery, going somewhere else can be really helpful. Care recipients also report about an improvement in about half in terms of their emotional and mental health after a trip. So creating shared experiences together, we find, was really important. But we also heard from family caregivers that about half of them have avoided travel because they have so many concerns about the difficulties and accessibility factors, et cetera.
Okay. If a caregiver can't go on the trip because it's too difficult, what would the care recipient do during that time?
So if the caregiver isn't able to go on a trip because they think it's going to be too difficult, but let's say the caregiver is going to go, but they're not taking their loved one with them, then they need to have backup care. They need to find out who can take care of their loved ones while they're away. That may be costly. It may be that there isn't a family member available to do that. They need to train that person. You know, they may be the ones who know everything that their loved one needs. So in many cases, it's a wedding or a family reunion, things that are important that the care recipient would like to go to. So helping caregivers navigate all of this and making it easier will be a big help for them.
So is the biggest challenge a caregiver going on a trip that the care recipient's already going on, or a caregiver wanting to go on a trip and not being able to bring the care recipient along?
I think the difficulty in avoiding travel is more around if the caregiver goes on a trip and takes the care recipient with them. So we have some tips that can help make that easier. And if you plan ahead, you can really have the opportunity to have some great memories with your loved one.
What kind of tips are there to make that vacation or that personal trip happen?
Well, most family caregivers are taking their loved ones on trips in cars, either their personal vehicle or rental cars. And what we need to do is plan for more time. And really, in any kind of travel, it's going to take you more time to get your loved ones where they need to go when you're traveling. You're probably going to make twice as many stops on a car trip than you would without them because they need to stretch. It's uncomfortable and painful for them to sit too long, perhaps. Or they need to have more frequent restroom stops. So just plan for that. Route your trip that way. Look ahead at where the rest stops are and the places, you know, plan where you're going to stop at least every 2 hours. And you may want to take an extra day for that trip. If you are traveling on an airplane, about a third of family caregivers do travel on airplanes, then think about, you know, security and looking ahead, contacting TSA. They have a site called TSA Cares with lots of great information. And, you know, get help. Maybe you're going to get wheelchair assistance going through security so that they can get through the airport without getting exhausted, but also get through security more easily. If you're on an airplane, maybe you get aisle seats so that you can help your loved one and near the bathroom on the plane if needed. Be sure and carry with you, whether you're on a plane or in the car, in a place where you know, it's very accessible, the medications that they may need, snacks, water to take the medications, a list of their medications, their doctors or anyone, any key medical history, anything you might need if by any chance something happened while you were away and you needed to get care for them. Make sure those things are easily available and think about their comfort too. You know, they may need extra pillows and various things to make the trip doable for them.
Yeah, I mean, those are some very common sense tips, and it all boils down to planning ahead and having a plan to make it through easily. Now, in the survey, when they were talking about difficulties, what were some of the specific barriers caregivers mentioned when planning for that trip?
Well, they're concerned about their loved one's health. You know, can we manage my loved one's health concerns on this trip? They're concerned about the cost and the budget. You know, family caregivers spend a lot of their own money, on average about 26% of their income every year. So this might be something else to add on to that. So they need to find the most affordable ways to travel. You know, they have other things they're pulling on their time away from work, you know, from their other family members. They're very concerned about accessibility, and about a third of family caregivers have spent more money on travel with accessibility options. So, for example, making sure they have an accessible hotel room or various things. And so, you know, that can be something that I think we can improve on in this country. We need to have more family restrooms available, for example, where you can easily go in and help your loved one. And one of the key things, too, is they're concerned about seating. I just took a trip and traveled to a lot of gardens, and I thought how my mom would have just loved it, but she would have not been able to do it because there weren't enough seats around these large gardens. This can be the case in airports and other large facilities. You know, make sure that they're going to have a place they can sit down and rest if they need to. We do find, too, that family caregivers are concerned about parking. If you think about it, I used to take my parents, and even when we just went, you know, on a short trip, finding a place to park, getting my mom's wheelchair out of the trunk, being able to help her get out, get my dad out with his service dog, all of that is a lot. And then I couldn't really leave them standing on the curb while I went and parked the car. So finding places, or bringing someone along who can stay with them while you park, or perhaps having a handicap or disability permit or placard in the car can be really helpful.
Yeah, okay, some really great tips there. So where can people go if they want to learn more, whether they're a family caregiver or a care recipient looking to plan a trip this summer?
You can go to aarp.org/travelwithcare for more information. And for all kinds of family caregiving issues, you can go to aarp.org/caregiving.
Awesome. So aarp.org/travelwithcare is the website to go to if you're interested in traveling with a loved one, whether you're a caregiver and you want to bring your care recipient along, or if you're the care recipient looking to plan the trip, aarp.org/travelwithcare. And for general information on caregiving, aarp.org/caregiving. And we've been speaking today with Amy Goyer. She's the National Family and Caregiving Expert for AARP. And Amy, you know, this is a topic that not a lot of people think about. And it's fantastic that you conducted a survey. You found out what challenges people were facing. And you have some fantastic solutions for people who want to travel, caregiver and care recipient together. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on the show. And just focus on those meaningful moments together.
Victor deployed for the first time to Afghanistan in 2003. At 4 in the morning, my phone rang. They said, "I regret to inform you that your husband was wounded in action." Victor sustained a moderate traumatic brain injury. I was doing school full-time, and I was also then caring for Victor. One of the most important elements of caregiving is taking care of yourself. I just didn't want to forget that I also had goals and that I also had a life. What I did is I challenged Victor to meet me halfway. There are almost 6 million military and veteran caregivers across the nation. We have our own journey, and we can fulfill that journey at the same time that we are helping our loved one.
Visit aarp.org/caregiving for a free military veteran's guide to navigate your caregiving journey and better care for your loved one and yourself. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
I'm Heather Vail, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Mark Attila Opowski, CEO of Sparrow Bioacoustics. First, he lost his father. Then, 5 years ago, Mark almost lost his own life. And now he wants to help other people so they don't have to go through the same thing. Mark, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you very much for having me.
So tell us about your personal experiences that led you to become interested in cardiac diseases.
Well, a number of years back, we lost my father prematurely to undiagnosed cardiac disease. It was sudden cardiac death based on an arrhythmia that hadn't been noticed by doctors previously. He was an otherwise healthy man, and it was a shock. And, you know, that puts you in a certain mindset. And then a number of years later, actually just 5 years ago, I suddenly became ill with a very rare disease, which caused cascading organ failure in my own body and sort of left me with life-altering scars. But as part of that process, you know, my heart was severely strained and damaged, as were my other internal organs. The recovery was a very long period. I learned a lot about being a patient. I learned a lot about being proactive with healthcare. I learned a lot about agency and personal advocacy when it comes to managing your own health. And mercifully, I had fairly good outcomes, all things considered. But those learnings became key. And it does change your mindset a little bit at the end of the day.
Yeah, for sure. So what's involved in being an advocate for your own health?
I think the most important thing is to feel like you're part of your own care team, if not the leader of your own care team. You have to be good at collecting your own data, getting your own information, making your own observations, recording things like the symptoms that are coming and going, the observations that you're making, and being able to present those things to your doctor or your doctors or your care team and say, look, you know, I'm having these feelings. These things are happening on this day in this way. Here's the information. Let's work on this together and let's try to drive for a better outcome.
Okay. So when it comes to accessing our data, you know, obviously there's smartwatches and other wearables that give us some amount of data, but what other options are there for a deeper look into our data so we can actually tell what's going on?
Well, one of the things that we went to work on was this idea that you should be able to record your own heart or your own heart sounds at home. Things like stethoscopes and listening to your heart and lungs are synonymous with good proactive care. And one of the big steps for us was like, look, let's make it available to everybody in the home or in the workplace or where they are in a super convenient way. The information is medically very rich. It tells you a great deal about both the structural and rhythmic condition of your heart and the ability to periodically not only check, but actually make medical grade recordings and have them with you when you go to the doctor to talk about shortness of breath or palpitations or sweating or unusual fatigue that you may be experiencing can be a key in getting earlier, better care for something like a quietly progressing heart condition, for instance.
And this is your Stethaphone that you developed?
Yes, we developed an application called Stethaphone. It's simply a download. It's available in the Apple App Store for iPhone users currently. There is nothing to charge, connect, or wear, so it's with you all the time. You quite simply hold the phone to your chest and press some buttons, and the system will make a medical-grade recording that you can then securely share with your doctor.
So the recording that it makes is similar to what a doctor would hear if he used a stethoscope on you live?
That's absolutely correct. There's a lot to it, actually, because your heart sounds are at a very particular frequency, and they're normally quite hard to hear. We've tried to make it easier for doctors to hear it. And the second thing that we've done is we've also made it clear for them to visualize the sound. So the system creates visual outputs so doctors can pinpoint anomalies like heart murmurs and other things that might stand out from the norm.
Okay. And can we read this data ourselves and make our own determination on those things? Or is it still something that a doctor needs his experience and expertise to translate into English?
What we really want you to do is we really want you to make the recordings as a good habit, you know, feel like you've really done something for your own health, captured something in the moment, and then depending on what your concern level is, to consult your doctor and take that information with you. Ultimately, any form of diagnosis needs to be done by doctors. It usually requires subsequent testing. So it's very important that you involve your doctors and be a part of that care team and drive it with them.
Okay, awesome. So Stethaphone V2 recently launched, but V3 is already in development. What changes are you looking to make with the next version?
Well, you know, right now we're seeking clearance with the FDA on V3. We are satisfied to date with the laboratory testing we've received, but it is a long process. So we're going to ask you to watch this space a little bit. I will give you a hint in that we've invested a great deal of science and effort into making these recordings, these signals, machine readable, something that machines can understand. And that opens up an enormous diagnostic power for your own phone to start making recommendations to your doctor as to what it may or may not be seeing. Again, we are still working on this as a future item. We're very hopeful, and we're looking forward to being able to talk about it more openly.
Awesome. Okay. So where can people go if they want to learn more or download the Stethaphone app?
Well, you know, you can certainly go to our website. There's lots of information on there. It's stethaphone.com. But if you go to the Apple App Store and just type in Stethaphone, you should find us quite easily. Download the software. It's a free trial. It's been extremely well received. We're getting, you know, great reviews on it. We're very pleased with the behavior and how well it's working for folks. And frankly, we're just looking for feedback at this point. We're very excited to see this scale out into the population and hopefully help a lot of people.
Awesome. So once again, the website is stethaphone.com, like stethoscope, but Stethaphone, stethaphone.com. Or you can download the Stethaphone app in the Apple App Store, either way. But if you want more information about it, stethaphone.com. And we've been speaking with Mark Opowski. He's the CEO of Sparrow Bioacoustics, who developed the Stethaphone app. And Mark, I want to thank you so much for being here and sharing your journey with us and what led you to develop the Stethaphone and how it can help people as well. So I really appreciate your time here today. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
Just a little heads up before something bad happens.
Move your coffee cup away from your computer.
Oh, no, 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 no.
So you can have more control.
Stop. You're texting your boss by mistake.
Uh-oh. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes like managing your weight, getting active, stopping smoking, and eating healthier, you can stop prediabetes before it leads to type 2 diabetes. It's easy to learn your risk. Take the 1-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Warning, the cap is loose on that ketchup.
Ugh. Don't wait. You have the power to change the outcome. Visit doihaveprediabetes.org today. That's doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
I'm Heather Vail, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm speaking with Gerald Thomas, Marine Corps veteran and spokesman for the American Red Cross. For more than 140 years, the American Red Cross has actively supported men and women in the military before, during, and after deployment. Gerald, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So everybody's heard of the American Red Cross, but what are some of the things the organization does that people might not be aware of?
Yeah, you know, the Red Cross is committed to helping military members, veterans, and their families, along with caregivers, prepare for, manage, and respond to the challenges of service. You know, each year the Red Cross provides around 510,000 services to members of the military, veterans, and their families around the world. And none of these services would be possible without our global network of dedicated volunteers who turn their military appreciation into action.
Okay. What are some of those services that the Red Cross offers to members of the military?
You know, through our Get to Know Us Before You Need Us program, the Red Cross meets with young men and women who choose to wear the cloth of this nation. And we talk with them and their families to answer questions about military family life. And we share how our services can help them before, during, and after deployment. In times of emergency, we have our Hero Care Network, and we help families communicate with their loved ones in a time of an emergency. For example, as a company commander, when I was in Iraq during combat, my first sergeant received one of these emergency messages. His father had a massive heart attack, and the Red Cross was able to find us, get him home within 48 hours to be with his family. And these services are available online, by phone, through our mobile app, or in person, 24/7, 365.
Nice. Okay. And what are some of the free workshops that the Red Cross has for military members?
We have resiliency workshops that happen in person or online, and they provide military members, veterans, or their families with tools for facing the challenges of stress related to service. We also have our medical and non-medical volunteers provide care, comfort, and therapy items at veteran hospitals and military treatment facilities around the world. And we also support caregivers. And caregivers are supporting a family member who may have been injured. And, you know, sometimes they feel isolated. Sometimes they lose their sense of hope. And sometimes they need training to increase their knowledge and skills on how to care for their loved one. And we support them through our military caregiver network.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that the workshops are both in person and online. When we're talking about the other programs you mentioned, like the Get to Know Us Before You Need Us program and the Hero Care Network, are those programs accessible both as well, or are they specifically either online, on the phone, or in person?
It's a mix. You know, the Get to Know Us Before You Need Us happen in person at the military entrance processing stations. We have Red Crossers on every military installation in the U.S. We also have Red Crossers in 37 overseas offices in places like Germany, Spain, and South Korea. And then when our troops deploy to combat zones, Red Crossers go along with them to places like Djibouti, Iraq, and Kuwait.
Nice. Okay. Now, you mentioned a network of volunteers around the world. How big a role do volunteers play in providing support for military families?
Volunteers play a critical role in fulfilling our mission. They do 90% of the work that we perform in the Red Cross, and they help us strengthen our communities through their service.
So if someone wanted to become involved as a Red Cross volunteer, what would be the process for doing that?
Anyone is interested in volunteering can go to redcross.org/volunteer, or they can connect with their local Red Cross chapter.
Okay. And what are some of the other ways that people could help the Red Cross with their mission?
You know, we need help with volunteers providing support to our military families, which we're talking about today. We also have opportunities to donate blood, provide critical life-saving training. We also, you know, there's several storms that are happening across our country, you know, over the last week. So responding to disasters. We need so many people to help us carry out this humanitarian mission.
Okay. And then how could a military member or potential military member access the services that you've been talking about?
They can access them in person on an installation where we have Red Crossers at each one of them. They can access our services online through our Hero Care Network app or by phone.
Nice. Okay. So once again, give the website where people can go if they want to learn more about the Red Cross, learn more about the various programs for the military, get involved, or access services.
Yes, redcross.org/volunteer to provide support, you know, for this critical mission, supporting our military families or any other things that the Red Cross does around supporting our community resilience.
Okay, awesome. So once again, redcross.org/volunteer is the website to go to. Plenty of information there. You can find out how to volunteer or get involved with the Red Cross. And if you're a member of the military, when you start the process, you'll get access to the Get to Know Us Before You Need Us program right on site there. If you need to access the Hero Care Network, you can do that online at redcross.org or the Hero Care Network app. or you can give a call, whichever works for you. So once again, redcross.org/volunteer is the place to start. And we've been speaking today with Gerald Thomas. He's a Marine Corps veteran and spokesman for the American Red Cross. And Gerald, I appreciate you being here and sharing with the audience these services. Whether they know about it or not, it's always a good idea to remind people of the work that you're doing and the great services that you're providing to our military members, and also how they can get involved and help as well. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Many of our U.S. veterans and service members face challenges, mental health struggles, housing obstacles, employment, food insecurity, and social isolation, to name just a few. I'm Bob Woodruff. My family and I started the Bob Woodruff Foundation in 2006 after I sustained a life-threatening injury while reporting from Iraq. Our service members had my back that day, and we need to have theirs now more than ever. At the Bob Woodruff Foundation, we raise awareness about the tough challenges veterans and military families face and invest in solutions to help support them in the next chapter of their lives. And with one solution comes the next. We solve a housing situation, we increase employment opportunities. We solve employment problems, we address food insecurity. We solve food insecurity, we impact physical and mental health issues. Learn more about our work at bobwoodrufffoundation.org/success.
I'm Heather Vail, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Liz Steble, president of the ProCo Agency and author of the new book, Succeeding as a Solopreneur, Six Keys to Taking the Leap, Winning Clients, and Building Wealth. Over half of all Americans have a great idea for a business or product, and lots of people are starting side hustles or freelancing gigs. But succeeding as a solo entrepreneur or solopreneur takes some know-how. Liz, thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Heather.
So why is solopreneurship becoming more popular?
There's a lot of hypotheses about that. But I think part of it is during and coming out of the pandemic, people started to rethink what they were doing with their lives. They decided that maybe they didn't like commuting 2 hours a day to and from work, or that they just wanted to have more control of their own schedules. And I think more and more people have decided to say, you know what, I think maybe I can work part-time and make just as good of money as I am when I'm working full-time.
Okay. And what are your six keys to becoming a successful solopreneur?
Well, I'd say the first one is be prepared to vanquish FUD, which is fear, uncertainty, and doubt, because FUD creeps in all the time. It's especially larger than life when you're thinking about making the leap to being self-employed, but it never fully goes away. I've been self-employed 20 years, and FUD still creeps in from time to time. The second key is to be known for something and be memorable. That leads to referrals. The third key is to constantly grow and nourish your network, which also, of course, leads to referrals, but it's also, you know, getting your name out there and establishing credibility. The fourth key is to be professional and be a business, be set up as a business, not as a freelancer or as a side hustle, but literally name your business, get a logo, do a website, all of those things, because that leads to you appearing to be more professional and you can make more money. Which leads to key number five, which is to be confident and charge what you're worth. Most people I see that step into solopreneurship don't charge enough. Number six is pay less tax to keep more of what you earn. And there's a bonus key, which is exceeding expectations.
Nice. Now, the first one that you mentioned, vanquishing FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt, as you mentioned, that plagues probably every solopreneur. So what are some keys to overcoming fear, uncertainty, and doubt?
Yeah, I always consider this like a little monster. I call it the FUD monster that sits on my shoulder or someone's shoulder and says things into your brain like, who are you to think you can start your own business? And what makes you think you can do this? And you don't know how to sell yourself and all of those, that bad self-talk. The first step is actually to notice that you're doing it and to say, okay, thank you. I know that you're here to protect me, right? Because it's part of our fight or flight instinct, but I know what I'm doing and I'm going to do it anyway. So that's probably the first thing. And the second is to find a community where you can get the help and support you need. You know, often our spouses or significant others aren't solopreneurs, so they don't know what it's like. But there are communities out there. There's local communities like the Women in Consulting Group in the Bay Area. There's the Society of Professional Consultants out on the East Coast. And I actually run an organization called the Professional Independent Consultants of America, which is PICA for short. And that's a virtual national organization.
Nice. Okay. Now, what are some things we should think about before taking the leap from a full-time job that has a safety net into being a solopreneur?
Actually, I do a free webinar on this about once every 6 weeks that covers the top 10 things to consider. But in a nutshell, I'd say the two most important are, A, do you have a financial cushion, right? Because it takes time to build momentum, to build awareness, to build your credibility, and to get your first contract paid, right? If you're going to be working for corporations, their typical payment terms are 45 days. So there can be quite a lull in cash flow. I'd say B, the second thing is to have a healthy amount of confidence that you can do it, right? So that's another part of overcoming the FUD monster. But being a solopreneur is the hardest job you'll ever have because you have to learn how to do new things and push your boundaries, your comfort zone, like quoting a price for your services. So a healthy dose of confidence goes a long way.
Okay. What is a slasher, as you call it?
Yeah, that's a term I came up with about 15 years ago when I started my first company. I fell into solopreneurship in 2004 when I got laid off. It was before the term was even invented. About 5 years into that, I started my first business, which is a talent agency that represents independent consultants. I placed them with Fortune 500 companies, or I should say my company does now. And while I was building that business, I called myself a slasher. I was a consultant slash entrepreneur because I was doing two things at once. I was still consulting for my own clients, billing through my new company, but I was also building the company at the same time. And then as time went on and the company gained more momentum, then I would say I was an entrepreneur slash consultant because I was doing a lot less consulting work. And then eventually the consultant part went away altogether. So it's a good way to think about approaching being self-employed or stepping into solopreneurship. You don't have to make the leap all at once. You can be a slasher.
That's funny. All right. Now, you also mentioned becoming known for something. So what's the best way to pick a niche so that we can become known for a specific area of expertise?
Oh, I lead a 90-minute workshop on this. This is actually the hardest part, I think, of being self-employed or being an independent consultant anyway. It's counterintuitive because a lot of people think that they should go to market as a jack of all trades because then they'll be available for more projects. But really what that does is it dilutes your brand and your memorability. People don't know what to call you for. Like if you go to market at 5 or 6 different things, people are like, well, I don't know if she's the expert on that, or maybe she can do that, or I'm not really sure. And it causes you not to be memorable. As I mentioned in my other business, the Proco Agency, we represent about 100 of the best consultants in org effectiveness across the country. And the ones that win the most work are the ones who have a specific niche, right? They all can do consulting and org effectiveness, but the ones that really have a good niche, like I'm a specialist in org design, win the most work. There's several articles on how to do this on the PICA's website, which is independentconsulting.org under the marketing tab. But also, I have the new book out, right? And there's a couple chapters in the book that actually tell you how to make yourself more memorable.
Nice. Now, speaking of the book, the subtitle of your book mentions winning clients, which is sometimes the hardest part, especially for creative solopreneurs, because they're good at doing what they do, but not necessarily finding the clients. So what are some tips for that?
Well, yeah, all the keys sort of interweave, right? So one is to have a strong brand, like the niche part, because then you can start to build credibility and awareness for your services. The most difficult part about business development for people is getting over their own fear. Frankly, it goes back to FUD. I was coaching somebody just the other day and he says, Liz, he says, you know, I've been in corporate now for 20 years and I sort of let my network get stale and cold. And how do I kickstart a stone cold network? And I said, well, the first thing is you shift your thinking and you don't think of it as business development or that it's stone cold. COVID time was weird. People don't know if it's been 5 years since you've been in touch, right? Because COVID time seemed like it lasted forever. And then in some ways, it seemed like it was only a year long. So, you know, reaching out and being authentic. One of the best ways I coach people to do when they're just starting out is to say, you know, I've got this idea and I'd like your help or I'd like your input. I really respect your opinion. And that way you can reach out to somebody maybe you haven't talked to in a long time. You're sort of asking for their help and you can say, I'm thinking about setting up my own shop or stepping out on my own. What do you think of that idea? And that's a terrific way to recharge your network and get the business development pump going because you're not selling anything. You're just asking for advice.
Awesome. Now, what are some of the small mistakes that people have made when trying to be a solopreneur that led to their failure?
Oh, I don't hang out with very many people who fail, but yeah, I'm thinking of a couple people I know that bounced back to full-time jobs. One is called the shiny object syndrome. I run a boot camp a few times a year where I help people launch and grow their own businesses. And this one guy, super smart, he is about easily 20, 25 years in corporate America, and he had shiny object syndrome. Even though the boot camp gives you very specific homework and we're on a certain pace over the 8 weeks, he just couldn't get the stuff done. I'd say, so did you get your website done? He said, oh, well, I started tweaking my other website, which is about real estate investment, and I got preoccupied doing that. So no, I didn't get my other website done. So that's what I mean by shiny object syndrome. He went back to a full-time job. He needed the corporate structure, right? He just needed the rhythm of the weekly meetings and meeting with his boss and the quarterly business reviews and all of that thing. So that's one mistake. And I would say another mistake people make, of course, is trying to be a jack of all trades. And then you're not an expert at anything. And then I think the third mistake is undercharging, people not charging what they're worth to make a go of it.
Okay. So some great advice there. And obviously, there's a lot of fantastic nuggets in your book, especially for people who are thinking about making the leap or in the process of making the leap to becoming a solopreneur or already a solopreneur and looking to grow their business. So where can people go if they want to learn more or get your book, Succeeding as a Solopreneur, 6 Keys to Taking the Leap, Winning Clients, and Building Wealth?
Well, I have to say solopreneur is not an easy word to spell. So the easiest way to find it would be to go to 6keys.info, not .com, because that one was rather pricey, frankly, but 6keys.info. And you can spell that S-I-X keys or the number 6keys.info, and they both will take you to the same place. From there, you can buy it from bookshop.org, Amazon, or direct a signed copy from me. Or you can also walk into Barnes & Noble, and they won't have it on the shelf, though, but you can order it wherever books are sold.
Nice. Okay. So 6keys.info is the website to go to. Spell it with the number, spell it out, doesn't matter. 6keys.info. The book is called Succeeding as a Solopreneur, 6 Keys to Taking the Leap, Winning Clients, and Building Wealth. And we've been speaking today with author Liz Steble. She's also the founder and president of the ProCo Agency. And Liz, I want to thank you so much for being here and sharing a wealth of your expertise with us because you've been doing it for 20 years. And thank you for sharing it in this book so that other people can learn from what you learned. So appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Heather. It's been a pleasure.
I am blessed. After I lost my mom, I was depressed and resentful. I couldn't find my way, but I am not lost.
That's right. I'm Tiffany. I work in behavioral health for youth advocate programs. Yeah, I empower Blessing with tools so she can see her strengths and set positive goals.
As a little kid, I experienced trauma and I acted out. Made some mistakes, but I'm not a mistake.
No, she's a good student and a great kid. As Jalen's YAP advocate, I'm always here for her.
We need YAP. The youth, they need strong support systems. I try to help the youth understand if you have a change of mindset, you can have a change of action.
YAP gives communities alternatives to residential care, youth incarceration, and neighborhood violence. After completing our program, nearly 90% of participants remain in their community. YAP works.
And now I'm finding my way and excited about my future.
Youth Advocate Programs. Others talk social change. We make it happen. Learn more at yapinc.org.
I'm Heather Vail with the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and this is your community events calendar for nonprofit initiatives and charity events around the Valley. Monday's Dark with Mark Chinook is a bi-monthly musical fundraising party at The Space, with each event raising $10,000 for a specific charity in 90 minutes. Upcoming shows include this Monday, June 17th at 8 p.m. benefiting Youth Leadership Authority, and Monday, July 1st at 8 p.m. benefiting the Love Yourself Foundation. Get tickets or find out more details at mondaysdark.com. That's mondaysdark.com. The Golden Ticket Raffle to benefit Junior Achievement of Southern Nevada is back with an updated prize structure, including weekly drawings and a choice of three prize buckets. Tickets are on sale through midnight on June 24th, and the drawing happens at a cocktail reception on June 27th from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the Virgin Hotel's Manor Room. Check out the prizes, buy raffle tickets, or RSVP for the drawing event at thegoldenticket.org. That's thegoldenticket.org. Angels of Las Vegas is holding their third annual Angels on the Green charity golf tournament honoring National Men's Health Month on Friday, June 28th with an 8 a.m. shotgun start at Angel Park Golf Club, 100 South Rampart. There's also food, raffle prizes, an awards ceremony, and live music entertainment. Find out more or sign up to play at angelsoflv.org. That's angelsoflv.org. The fifth annual Battle for Vegas charity softball game between the Vegas Golden Knights and the Las Vegas Raiders is happening on Saturday, July 13th, with gates at 6 p.m. and first pitch at 8 p.m., plus post-game fireworks at 9:30 at Las Vegas Ballpark. Watch your favorite sports stars battle it out on the ball field, all for a good cause. Find out the details or get your tickets at battleforvegas.com. That's battleforvegas.com. And the Las Vegas Clark County Library District's holding their annual free summer challenge reading and activities program through July 31st. This year's theme is all about our planet's beautiful oceans, and they have plenty of activities and prizes up for grabs. Find out more or get started at thelibrarydistrict.org/summerchallenge. That's thelibrarydistrict.org/summerchallenge.